Welcome back to the Swearapist podcast, your tattooed and screwed look at the underbelly of therapy culture. I'm your host, Lisa Hoffman. As a reminder, the Swearapist podcast is meant for your entertainment and insight only, not for clinical advice. The opinions given here are strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what works for you, leave the rest. We encourage you to be aware of your own triggers and concerns and to exercise discernment at your own discretion. We're here to fuck shit up. And today's guest is one of my absolute favorite humans to fuck shit up with. I have asked this person to join us because, I did a previous episode with Kelly, and I told you, the listener, that Kelly was one of my interns at one point in time, and interning on a team that I worked on. And the same is true for this person. And A1, from day one, we had a very unique sibling-like bond. I have a lot of love and affection for this person, if you will, although I know that he's already scowling at me. He's not the touchy-feely type, but ladies and gentlemen, he is a therapist and one of the finest I know. So tonight we are joined by Ed, who I lovingly call Squidward. Squiddy, how's it going?
Okay, what a wonderful, I guess.
Don't say good things about me, I'll cry.
Yeah, no, I'll totally deflect all of that. But no, I guess a long time listener, first time caller. Yeah.
You've been riding with us for all the episodes that I have forced you to listen to, apparently.
Well, not forced. You asked, and you know, what do friends do? You do what friends ask, especially if it's something as little as listening to a podcast.
Yeah. And I think the podcast is doing okay. Generally good reviews, except for the email I got this morning. So other than that, which is fine. For the listener, I got, I think, a spam email today with the subject line, lying whore. But the audio that was attached was just like two people with Southern accents talking on the phone about tortellinis and spiderwebs. So I was like, okay. I probably gave my computer a virus by opening it because, hey, sometimes I don't look before I leap. Anyway, we'll change the subject. Squiddy, why don't you tell the listener a little bit about you, because your background before landing in therapy is a little bit complex, maybe a little bit non-traditional.
Oh, yeah, non-traditional. That's actually something I was doing in school today. I was talking about non-traditional students. Because yes, I am.
Because you are like 40.
Yeah, I'm 38, so I'm definitely non-traditional. But no, my background's highly convoluted. Obviously, grew up in this area, like rural Pennsylvania. Like literally my graduating class was 46 people. And continued on. Actually went to school for computer engineering and then found out that, you know, I'd rather party instead of actually
real.
Go to school.
Absolutely. It's real.
Yeah. Don't join any of the frats, just go to the frat parties.
Real.
Yeah. That's, you know, kind of where a lot of stuff started.
That's the cheaper way, anyhow. We don't have to pay for friends today.
No. and then then I ended up joining the military because I did not have any money left. You know, scored pretty well on my ASVAB, so I ended up joining the Air Force. Doing that for a little while. I specialized in munitions, so you know, 2WOs or the 5.61s. Shout out to you guys.
That means something to somebody out there, right?
Right.
My brother's listening in Vegas. He'll know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we were the redheaded stepchild of the Air Force, so we were always segregated off to our own little area because we had all the bunkers, we had all the bombs, missiles, all that stuff. And I specialized in, specifically, they liked having me in precision guided ones. So they had me doing the bombs, then, you know, programming, repairing, you know, all that good stuff, telemetry packs and everything. And then I'm deploying all over the place with them. Did that for almost 12 years. And I don't know if I'll hold off on the reasons why I got out. But then I ended up getting out. I got out what December 23rd of 2017, and then I ended up going to school. First semester was January 18th of 2018. So I transitioned straight from there to school, trying to be a high school physics teacher.
I could see
And
you doing that, actually. I could so and our listeners can't see you, but Ed has like the very traditional like curly Q. What do you even call that? Your mustache situation.
handlebar mustache with it's
But
not a 5 o'clock.
it's not a Hulk Hogan handlebar like my father-in-law walking around, brother. It's not like that.
No, that's more like a Fu Manchu.
Oh, that's yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I got yep, you're
Yeah.
right.
Mustache culture,
I don't
but
have
yeah.
one, bud, so I don't
Yeah, no, funny thing, what you do when you get out of the military. Yeah, everybody, all dudes, what do? You grow out your hair, you grow out your beard. I found out really quickly I do not like long hair. And then I also found out a little bit right after that is I don't like having a beard.
Fair. So
But I
you
know,
left the military and went full blonde rebellion mode.
yeah, everybody does. I even well, technically, I for your cosmetologist out there, I colored my hair dark blue.
I have so much like knowing you, I have so much trouble envisioning that because like you kind of do like the temp fade, sometimes like the hard part situation. Like you keep your hair very, very kept.
Neat. Yeah.
Yes.
That's one of those things that's because it was like that for a long time. And well, when I was in high school, my sisters, I grew up with three older sisters, and whenever they were doing things to their hair, they always experimented on mine.
Oh, like we've got some extra dye left in the bottle. Let's see what Ed's doing.
Yes, basically my hair was every color of the rainbow at one point. They ended up having it purple, and then that faded into a little thing. They had polka dots on the back of my head. I had no idea.
Oh, so you were like a puppet. Like a little, they like treated you like a plaything.
Like I said, they're older sisters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the youngest, so that's they always had to, put their stamp on me.
So we get
But
out of the military, we jump right into school a month later. Where do we go from there?
And then that's kind of where things like started kind of getting straight. I guess I should go back into why I got out of the military, because that kind of goes into the ne next step of things. Obviously, military ammo, they are drinkers. I was a drinker before I joined. And then I just got worse.
And that was kind of
I'm
a low-key pattern in your family, right?
yes. I wouldn't even say low key. It's all over the place on both
I didn't
sides
want
of
to
my
insult
family.
anybody. I love your
No.
mom, right? Like I know a lot of your family, so I didn't want to, throw it out there too hard, but yeah.
Well, it's well, my family knows that I call it the way I see it. I am tactful on the way I say things nowadays. I do get a little harsh, especially when I get stressed. But honestly, when it comes to like addiction and everything like that, it like stems way back into grandparents, even farther than that. Like my dad, I wouldn't say like physically addicted or anything, but he had a string of DUIs. Whenever he was home, because he was a truck driver for most of my life. There was a not a day that he didn't have a 30 pack of Busch and a fifth of Jose Cuervo.
High
And
degree of
also,
unmanageability.
yeah. And got to it was like an asshole. Fun fact, none of us kids like tequila. That was the one thing that none of us did. But yeah, it goes into other people's stories. My mom's side of the family, my grandfather on her dad, was alcoholics, smoker, all that stuff. They came well he came from French
Canada,
Canada.
stop
Canada.
it.
Yeah, those
I
Canadians.
thought I fucked up by insulting all of Australia on an episode. You just went and fucked up Canada.
Yeah, well, you don't have any listeners in Canada yet, do you?
Yes.
Oh, crap. Sorry. You guys are great people. I went to Toronto. It's a beautiful city.
Wait, are you allowed in Canada?
And technically not anymore.
I was gonna
But
say, because I know that under certain circumstances, Canada doesn't want people like you and me.
yes, but that's only if they do a check, and they don't do that all the time when you're going across the border.
You're willing to risk it?
No, but this I've been to Toronto and all that stuff, Niagara Falls and everything, back before my criminal history. But but like I said, with family history and everything like that, I don't want to put anybody on blast, but hopefully they're okay with it. My even my siblings, we all have dealt with different things when it comes to addiction and more importantly, mental health.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I thought was a crock of shit for a long time.
Was that because of like the military culture, or was that how your family viewed mental health?
A little bit of both. My dad was one of those people that said, if somebody wanted to commit suicide, he would load the gun.
Ooh, so dad was not the most emotionally intelligent, most emotionally soft, not very vulnerable by the sounds of it.
Absolutely not. No, not until his later years when he became a grandfather. For some reason, grandparenthood like
I see that sometimes.
doesn't fix, but it makes people a little bit more aware. Because I think it's maybe something that deal with existential stuff, but then again, that's also my own personal views. But yeah, not really good on the emotional part and all that stuff. And then military, obviously, as they Woody Harrelson said it best in Zombieland, nut up or shut up, right?
Yeah, real. Yeah.
That was basically what we did. He's like, you have a problem, you swallow that shit and you go.
So, did you have a mental health diagnosis before you enlisted?
No. A little bit even more about on my background. I obviously grew up in a small town and all that stuff. The only things that were the major issues that they ever had me in was I was in special education for my entire grade school career. I was also in speech therapy for 6 years because I didn't talk until I was six. But they it's like I had problems with my tonsils and all that stuff. I had a lot of health issues before puberty hit. Once that hit, everything else went out, all that stuff went out the window. But
Good thing you grew out of so much of that.
yeah, and now I have a very good immune system.
And you speak fine.
Most of the time, sometimes it does come out when I get stressed or
You're stressed.
if I get obviously when I get really into something, I stop trying like focusing on my enunciation. Because these are things that I have to focus on almost all the time. A lot of people don't realize that because I'm usually a very flat affect, and I'm always focused on what am I saying, how am I saying it, and also how am I emoting.
So, how long have you been autistic masking?
I have not been masking autism because I have not been diagnosed. But as you know, I am
Yeah.
obviously not an idiot. I'm usually very, very good with it when it comes to book smarts and all that stuff. I was in special education for reading, arithmetic, and these are things that I'm actually very good at.
Yeah, like hyperfixated
Yes.
good.
Go ahead, keep on
No,
trying to
it's okay.
make me like
It's all,
that.
and you know, I don't say that to like poke fun at autism as a diagnosis. We, you know, but I mean, we kind of joke like you have certain mannerisms that I'm like, are you sure you're not a little touched? Are you sure? Are you sure? But regardless, whether there's a label on it or not, doesn't change your experience with those things. It doesn't change how you function in your day to day, and it doesn't make you more or less, right? Like, it's just kind of something that we lightheartedly joke about, which, you know, I'm sure I'm going to catch some shit for even joking about it and admitting it publicly, but we're fucking therapists and our job is hard sometimes. And you and I worked a lot of night shifts together. We did a lot of like live or die shit together. And when you have that kind of, and I kind of want to call it a trauma bond, right? When you kind of have that together from working in a facility, you know, like there are certain dark humor things that, you know, we have a lot of dark humor between the two of us. And that really, you know, you and I worked for several years together in drug and alcohol. And if we don't laugh, we cry, right? That's the stuff that like keeps us from burning out.
When we were doing lunch the other day and everything like that, we said, well, it's like I said it. It's like, I found this, like, if you do this Venn diagram of like humor and all that stuff, you have military and all dark humor, and it's almost exactly encompassed as addicts as well, because we all have to have that morbid sense of humor, because like you said, if we are not laughing about it, we're crying about it. And honestly, if we can't, have some sense of humor about some things, yes, we are sensitive about a lot of stuff, but if we can't have a sense of humor, then we are actually part of the problem.
And that's something that's been really cool, you know, not just like our professional relationship. And I think this speaks to the part of the podcast that's like by therapists for therapists. We don't often talk about the relationships that we form with other therapists as we're working together. You know, you and I have had our bumps in the road, right? We've
Absolutely.
definitely like, we've butted heads, we've disagreed clinically, we've disagreed personally, we've both said some shit that was like out of pocket. But we've also like pranked each other's offices and we've thrown parties. Oh my gosh, you remember that time I threw you that unicorn birthday party in your office?
Yeah, and then I had to, like, literally, like, it was like 8:58, and I had a client at 9. They were there, and I had a freaking, what was it?
Balloons. I filled your
The
office up to
freaking
like your knees with balloons. You had a
floor full of
pinata.
balloons. I had to go with a pen and pop so many balloons. I'm surprised nobody hit the deck, because it sounded like a shotgun going off.
You know, but like we have, you know, all jokes aside, we have been able to we should tell the people about the duckening though.
Duckening of,
I'll get
what
there
was
in a
it,
second.
2021?
We have been able to like have really great, like difficult conversations, uncomfortable conversations. And I think the fact that both of us have like the therapy background helps, but I also think recovery helps. I think there's a lot of aspects that have made our friendship, you know, really great in terms of like emotional intimacy and our ability to like disagree with each other or butt heads and still like commit to working it out and like staying friends and not just being like, hey, fuck you, right?
Yeah, well, it's like,
Ducking.
yeah.
Oh, sorry. Did you have another thought on that before we move on?
Well, and like I was just kind of, we'll go ahead and do the thing that you kept on making fun of, piggybacking off of that.
Oh, yes, corporate speak. Blech.
It's ingrained in me because of the military. But still, no, like, there have been many times, and you and I've always talked it out. Usually, when it's something going on with me, I have to do some things, and I have to take time to think about it, on why am I thinking this way? Why am I feeling that way? But we've always been able to find some common ground. And honestly, it's half the time it was more or less misinterpretation and everything like that, or perception even.
And sometimes you just need a good night's sleep and a run in the morning and
Hey, don't blame it all on me.
I'm not blaming it all on you, but
I'm
you know, and we'll
joking.
come back to that too. But when you run is when you do your best thinking. And you know, we'll talk
This is
about
true.
how important running has been to you. But do you want to tell the listener about the duckening, Ed?
Oh, well, honestly, when it comes to yours and my history, there's so many different stories. Heck, how we actually got to truly, like, realize who we were.
Oh, yes, because we
Yeah.
were going to yoga together without fully, we didn't know each other, but Troy and I were going to the yoga studio in our town right before the COVID shutdown. And so we
If
had bumped into each other before I moved up here full time. And you were at yoga class when I think things had just kind of started opening back up. And I was at the studio and you were sitting there kind of like bitching to the instructor about somebody who had newly gotten hired and we were all wearing masks still, so we had no way of recognizing each other really. And you know, I got hired in October, so I was probably wearing long sleeves, which I don't do at yoga, and when I don't have sleeves, I'm highly recognizable. you know, so you're sitting at yoga kind of bitching about this new person. You had to move offices and you're
Stole
just
my
like,
office.
oh, she stole my office. She stole.
Oh, I don't sound like that.
Oh, yes, you do. And I just was like, oh, hey, it's me.
Hi, I'm Lisa.
Yeah, I was the new
Immediate.
person you were bitching about at
Yeah.
yoga.
Immediate foot in mouth.
Which is very funny to me. And we, laugh a lot about it now, but the duckening was kind of the onset of all of our office pranks together
That was
because
the
I
first
figured
one.
out, yeah, I started the fire, I suppose. I figured out during COVID that you can order about 2,000 little teeny tiny plastic rubber duckies on Amazon for like $12. So I bought a bag and I hid them all over your office in all of your things. And weren't you keeping them in a jar at one point when you
I
found
was
I
keeping
re-emptied the jar?
I bought a nice little like glass container, because I was going to like, oh, look at this. I found all of them. And what did I do? I walked out of my office. I probably went to the bathroom or something. And then all of a sudden, they were all hidden again. I was I had to close my door because the front desk ladies were laughing so hard because all I have to do is every time I found another one, all I would do is scream, "Duck!" And it actually
Where
happened.
were your favorite duck hiding places?
I can tell you where my least favorite was.
Your water bottle?
My water bottle and my hand sanitizer.
The hand
It
sanitizer?
took me
I would think the hand sanitizer would dissolve a plastic duck after a while.
like an hour to get that thing out.
They were everywhere, though. I put them everywhere I could. Oh my gosh. What about when I filled your umbrella with Swedish fish?
Was it Swedish fish or was it the ducks? I know you filled my umbrella with something.
It was Swedish fish. I put like a whole box of Swedish fish in your umbrella.
Because I use my umbrella, it just kind of fell on it fell on me while I was, in the rain. But no, yeah,
Comedic genius.
that's one of those things. Like, yeah, obviously we pranked each other over and over and over again. But yeah, that kind of started everything because of the yoga thing. I obviously inserted my foot in my mouth, and then then being who I had, oh, I am, I had to correct it. So then we then started talking in the office, because I was already well into my internship. I was halfway through my internship when you showed up there, and so that's what kind of started, and then. Like almost immediately, it was obviously we grew close very quickly to the point of that everybody got worried of when you were leaving, how I would react.
Oh, when I left to do private practice.
Yes.
Well, but we've also done a really good job. And I think, this is a side of like leaving an agency. How often do we leave a job and never see those people ever again? And it's like sometimes we only form those relationships because of proximity to one another, right? Like because we're around each other 8, 9, 10, 12, 14 hours a day in our case, sometimes, once we leave, we have to make like a concerted effort in continuing to spend time together. And, you and I have it really easy because we're both very much like, if we don't talk for a month, that's cool. We'll text here and there. If we don't see each other, it's okay, but we will make time and we'll pick right up where we left off and it's no big deal.
Yeah, and that's usually how I hate to use the term, but the stereotypical and I hate using stereotypical terms, the guy best friend. They don't even talk, don't even know anything about each other, and then all of a sudden they say hey, and then they have like 3 hour lunch or whatever, and then it's exactly where it was.
So
But
coming back to undergrad, right?
yes.
You were talking about your partying getting worse after. Okay.
So when I joined the military, first station was Japan. Legal drinking age was 20. I just turned 20.
God bless
So
America.
not to mention, shout out to Okinawa. That place was gorgeous. Other than the first like week, you take a shower and you walk outside and it feels like you're walking into a shower.
Ooh, very
Just,
humid.
yeah, subtropical islands, I tell you, man. Yeah, they drinking was happening there. That's when things started like really getting, I wouldn't say out of hand, because we always had plans. It was always weekends and it wasn't all the time. But then Korea hit, and then I ended up going to Alaska of all places, and that's where it got really out of hand.
Oh, I know about Alaska.
Yeah, that's where I met my ex-wife. She was my bartender.
You started off really strong. I did not know
It's like I'm typically I'm an open book, but I don't ever give all the information unless asked.
that part. Ed
Because it's
doesn't want a
like,
bucket of beers. He wants a bucket of red flags.
yeah, I like red flags. But well, because I want everything in order, but because of that, I crave chaos, which is something I had to actually learn to live with.
You got used to
But
it too on some levels.
oh, absolutely. Because if you don't get chaos in one area, you make it in another area.
Real, real.
Yeah, that was my first alcohol related DUI, and I'm getting in trouble with the military. But it was very soft. They basically, I'm really good at test taking and everything. I had a line number. They took it away. A line number meaning, for the non-military folk, is I was ma making E5. I had a number. I was waiting to basically sew on my next stripe, my next rank. They took it away, and then made it so I couldn't test for a couple years. So I continued doing that. Then everything was going all right. I didn't stop drinking, because first offense DUI. Everybody has DUIs, right?
That's the cop's fault. He shouldn't have followed me.
Oh no. Funny story. I had my lights off and it was 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
But it
Alaska's
was
different
like,
though, right? Isn't it light?
it was during summer, and you could still see, but the problem is, Alaska state law is lights need to be on in time of darkness, as in like normal times of darkness, you have to have your lights on.
So you were like 6 hours overdue by the sound of it.
Definitely. Not to mention I shouldn't have been driving anyway.
Yeah, the drinking part, yeah.
But yes, didn't stop drinking, but I definitely slowed down and definitely did not drive after drive doing that or anything like that. But continuing on, we ended up leaving Alaska, moving down to Georgia, probably the worst station I've ever been at. Some of the best people I've met, but that's also in a time of adversity and everything like that, you end up making really close bonds with people.
I love how all of the people that I've had on the podcast so far that have served in the Air Force have like a least favorite station. Like all of you guys are like, oh, this place, shout out to the worst place I ever lived. Like, okay, Georgia, I see you. I
Yeah.
love Georgia.
Well, you've been to North Georgia and all that stuff, Savannah or Atlanta,
Atlanta,
all the good stuff.
yeah.
I was down in South Georgia, 30 miles above the border of Florida. So basically, all the nasty smell of the stagnant pond water or swamp water, and not enough breeze to blow it through.
Oof, okay.
Yeah. But beside the point. Got married, well, married, then moved down there. Drinking was another thing. I ended up getting another DUI, but the Air Force didn't learn about this one, because it was at home here in Pennsylvania. I ended up being able to cover it up, and then a little while after that, got another DUI down in Georgia. That one did not do too well, because
I
I
feel like this is
already.
like when you travel, like those people who have like maps where you can get like a quarter for every state you've been through or you've been to, and you put it like in the map. You know, you're like DUI in PA, DUI in Alaska, DUI in Atlanta, or you know, Georgia. You're like collecting DUIs for every
Collecting,
state you're in.
Yeah, I'm well, you know, gotta remember these places, right?
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I got a DUI down there, and that's when my mental health really took a hit. Because the reason why I was drinking so heavily at that time was like everything was just exploding everywhere. I didn't even know what was even happening. Even when I think back, it's like I can't even like pinpoint times of when I was feeling anxious. I was feeling this way. I can't, because I didn't even fathom I was feeling that at the time.
Mental health is on top of that.
Because at that time I didn't even I still thought mental health was a bunch of crap.
And you can't be in the military if you have mental health.
And this was after many deployments and everything like that. I've been all over the place. So, you know, I'm not going to take away my time there. And I've visited a lot of places. I've done a lot of different things. But I ended up trying to commit suicide the same weekend that I got that DUI. Sparing the details, I tried really, really, really hard, but ended up the reason why I'm still alive is because I tried really hard. It stopped things from happening, basically, sleeping pills and then, you know, cutting and all that stuff. But because of the sleeping pills, my blood pressure was so low that I couldn't bleed out, and they found me before anything happened.
And thank you for calling it what it is. You know, that's something that I really value about the podcast project and its mission is that we're gonna talk about real life, right? We're gonna use words like suicide, and we're gonna, like really be super honest about what puts us, on both sides of the chair, right? Like my chair, your chair, vice versa. I appreciate your vulnerability and sharing that with the listener so that, maybe somebody out there who's feeling like, hey, I can't be a therapist or I can't go to therapy because of these things. If they hear you say it, then maybe it opens a door for somebody else too.
Yeah, and you know, we're human. As much as like I always tell everybody, contrary to popular belief in my office, I am not I'm not a robot. Terms alien, robot, and all these other things have been thrown out, even, you know, ASD. But you know, we'll leave that at that.
You're just you, Ed.
I am just me. I am a culmination of all my idiosyncrasies.
So, how did life go after the suicide attempt?
Well, the Air Force did not know what to do with me. They stuck me into a mental health hospital for over a month
Off
because they
base or
didn't
on base?
off base.
Okay.
But they were contracted with the military, so I was there with like it was half and half of civilian and military people. But with that, like they didn't know what to do with me. I don't know if you wanted to get into like the whole therapy there and all that stuff that I can always get into later. But let's just say
This won't be our first, this won't be our only episode, so we have lots of time to talk about everything.
my experience was not good, because psychiatrist took 5 minutes, looked at me, said I slapped the diagnosis of mental health of major depressive disorder. Anybody who knows me knows I am not depressed.
No, you're way too manic to be depressed.
I have an insane amount of anxiety, which
Yeah.
is why I was drinking so much, but I know that now. I was drinking so much causing my depression, but he took 5 minutes and didn't even realize what was actually happening and didn't even want to ask the right questions.
And at that point, would you have like met criteria for detox?
No.
Okay. So it wasn't like that.
Yeah, no. I never been physically dependent. I was always the a weekend drinker, but you're damn right. Friday and Saturday night, I was at the bar. I was at the karaoke bar, and it would be easy for $200 a night, easy.
So you had like that emotional or relationship with
Yeah,
alcohol where it's like, hey,
it.
I'm feeling this. I don't want to feel this. Better pour some booze on it.
Yeah, I was. I always tell everybody that I was never physically dependent, but I was psychologically dependent, and it was so ingrained is I had to have it because it helped me relax.
Right.
So that's like everybody in their different levels of, you know, even their recovery, their addiction, or anything that they want to identify it as. I identify it as like I was psychologically dependent, and I probably would have been physically dependent if I kept on going.
And it's easy to be, you know, excuse me, a little bit in denial when we're not physically dependent, right? When we're not shaking, when we're not sick, when we're not, you know, any of that stuff, it's easy to be like, well, I'm not addicted. This is fine.
Oh, and that continued. It's like obviously I still continued to drink. I lasted
My
after I
dude.
got out. Yeah. I got out of that hospital, and then I ended up getting having a rank or my rank taken away, you know, and then I ended up getting a higher tenured out. That means my rank was too low for how long I was in.
Well, an incomplete
But
suicide is a perfect excuse for us as I'll speak for like myself, is like a perfect excuse for us as addicts to be like, well, can't even do that, right? Better go get loaded.
you know,
You
I
think
failed
like
at
that.
that. I failed in so many different areas of my life. I even failed in killing myself. So, but
I mean, I'm glad you suck at doing that.
I am too, because I actually enjoy where I'm at. I am very proud of what I've accomplished, and I would have never been where I'm at without any of those experiences. But I lasted maybe 3 or 4 weeks. Once I got out of there, it started off. I was just going to the bar and drinking NA beers, you know, because I like the call. I like the it's my socialization. That's where I go to relax. That's where I go. I love karaoke. I still do, but
Right.
I have plans now. But yeah. Oh, sorry, my cats are playing around with something.
And the way you said yeah and looked over, I was like, is somebody at your door, Ed? Is
No,
there
no,
a rendezvous
no.
happening
The cats are playing with the nightlight that I pulled out to plug in the laptop.
I love that you are living in, I mean, there is someone in your life. We're not going to dog that person out, but you know, you're essentially like in your bachelor pad, but you're like, hey, I have cats though.
Yeah, three of them.
I love that for you. I remember when you got them too. That was so cute.
Yeah, I wanted one. I agreed to two, and somehow I got three. So.
Fair.
Yeah, but
You take the number of cats that the universe distributes to you. It's not a choice.
yeah, and anybody who knows me, I love the number three, so it ended up working out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So you made it about 4 weeks
at
before you
most.
relapsed.
Yeah, and it started off with a beer here and there and all that stuff, and I was always like the people down there, a couple of the people, they always looked after me after that. The only thing is, I wasn't going to be there for very much longer. I still talk to a couple of those people that are down there. I still visit them because they helped pull me out of what I did to myself. They were always making sure I wasn't home alone. They're like, and they had four dogs, and they all like pile drive me every time I was in the door. So it's like they're like, you want to come over for some dog therapy? I'm like, no, and then they would be at my doorstep.
Well, it sounds like, you know, not to throw shade on anybody, but when you were released from that inpatient stay after your attempt, it doesn't sound like there was much of an aftercare plan. It doesn't sound like there was like medication up, and you had what you feel is an incorrect diagnosis to begin with because they didn't get to know you. They didn't drill down into your history. They didn't look at like, why are you like, what brought you here? So I would imagine even any medication they might have given you might not have been correct. Any action plans might not have been correct. But what was the aftercare plan?
They had me going to like an outpatient type thing, like twice a week for an hour, basically just group therapy. Anybody, again, anybody who knows me, I'm very good at masking things, because that's how I survived, because I was not normal growing up. And because of my ineptitude socializing as a grade schooler, when I got into high school, I found out how to act like everybody else.
You did the chameleon thing that so many of us do.
Yeah, and I got really good at it. And that, you know, obviously made it so everybody didn't think I ever had a problem,
Right.
to the point where I didn't know I had a problem.
So we keep using, keep getting DUIs. Where do we go from here?
Well, then once all that stuff happened and everything like that, I got out of the military. I moved back home. I had a plan to go to school. I've always been pretty good at school. Though one of the things I always wanted to do was to teach. I just didn't go into teaching when I first graduated high school because there was no money in teaching.
Right.
I said, screw it, might as well do something I wanted to do. That was the only plan I had, so that's what I
Right.
did. I met some pretty good people in that program and everything. But again, I came home, I was drinking again. I was going to the bar again and all that stuff, and got into a car accident, and which I still have scars because I should have went to the hospital, but I refused. Because they would
Really
shave
good
my
at taking
head.
care of yourself.
Well, yeah, they were going to shave my hair.
Oh, we can't have that.
No, I have nice hair. With that one, it for a fourth offense DUI, I ended up luckily in Pennsylvania at that point. It wasn't felony. This was 6+ years ago.
Yeah, because my question is, how are you not in jail at this point?
Yep, 6+ years ago. I ended up getting into state intermediate punishment, the SIP program,
Oh, we love that.
which is not a thing anymore. But when I did that, ended up going through treatment for them. Mostly through, let's say, my sentence, my state sentence, and everything like that, I had a lot of time on my hands. I did a lot of reading. I finally made the connection of what is the factor that's causing all this to happen.
You got to the bottom of the emotional issue.
And the only thing I came up with was obviously the problem is me. So
Well, that's a
I.
freeing admission, though, right? Because, like, if we admit that if I say I'm the problem, that means I can change the problem.
Yeah, and I changed the problem, no doubt, because I never asked for help a day in my life, and I was still not going to ask for help.
You stubborn ass.
I am very stubborn. I did. I it's like basically, I explain it to all my clients nowadays. You hit your head against the wall over and over and over again. I finally broke through, but there is easier ways to do this.
Do you break through? Do you pass out? What are your options
Yeah, it's like, and thinking about it back, I'm like, there's so many more easier ways to do it, and I was just an idiot.
Well, and this is something I have always loved about our relationship too, is because, as our listener knows, I have a very specific pathway of recovery, and so do a lot of the other people around me. That's not your pathway.
No, I
I love
refuse.
reminding people that, like, there are other pathways, right? Like, it's not like, I know that there's a lot of language around the quote unquote gold standard in treatment. We're not talking about treatment. That whole thing can get fucked, right? We're talking about, like, on a heart to heart level as human beings, how do we do it outside of systems of treatment? So, what do you do?
A lot of work. It was actually I call it my soul searching journey, even though I don't believe I have a soul, because if I did, I lost it a long ass time ago.
You do. Listen, the way you cook, child. Oh, there
No,
has to be a soul in there somewhere.
it's all hatred. It's all hatred.
You're out here making cheesecakes filled with hatred.
Yeah, because would you rather have it full of hate, where I'm like, oh, I'm going to kill him very slowly with sweets?
I love that,
No.
actually. This is why you live in my garage and you are my private chef.
Don't live in your garage. Don't tell the people that.
They're gonna believe you.
Well, I finally busted that rumor down. And you've been gone for what?
3 months?
3 months. It
Yeah.
took it took it took a couple of months for me to have people stop asking me about it.
About you living in my garage?
Somehow I got to some of the clients.
That's hilarious. It's only funny as long as we're not damaging clients. I'm throwing out that disclaimer. Don't fucking come for me. None of our office pranks ever damaged people or property. So people can fucking suck it. I don't give a fuck. Don't come for me.
Well, and it's also important for our clients to see us as humans too. And it's like
Agree.
that's one of the things that I've started off with right from the bat. But again, that's also because of my own experiences. But yeah, so while I was locked up, being classified and all that stuff, I really looked into why I couldn't control drinking. It's like I knew I wasn't was didn't have any physical dependence. Everybody always, every time I ended up being in like drug and alcohol treatment, everybody's like, "Why are you here?" And I'm like, "I don't freaking know." And it's like, you tell me. I'm the one coming to you or
Isn't that
having
the
to.
worst too when you have a client in the chair who does that to you and they're like, I don't know, you're the expert, you tell me, you fix me. Ugh.
Yeah, but after some experience and everything like that, you kind of like learn certain questions to ask and everything, and you can always start on something small. Again, was never the case for me, but that's I do not have a very good relationship with being on the other side of that chair.
Meaning like
But
being a client, you don't do well with
yes,
that part.
well, I didn't have good experiences just because I probably didn't help with my masking and everything like that, but I never had anybody to actually get to the bottom of the problem or to even try to explore the problem. Heck, the program I was in when I was in prison, they literally the counselor literally just gave me a stack of self-help books, told me to read them and write papers.
Oh, what a shame. I'm sure you loved it though. I'm sure you did it.
I hate self-help books. Hate it.
Really? You're such like a type A student though.
Oh, I did it.
I did it, but I hated it.
I didn't
Don't
like
ask
any
me
of
how I
it.
did it. I just did it. It was hard.
Oh, yeah, well, it's like because you read one self-help book, you read all the self-help books. No trash talking about people trying to help themselves and everything like that. But it's like I like real talk, and self-help books are all one-sided.
I mean, listen, all of the for all of like the red pill incel, like Jake Paul, who's that other fucking dude, Andrew Tate, like for all of those fucking red pill ass dudes, like this is why Fight Club exists, right? Like Fight Club was literally written as a satire against like 12-step self-help culture, right? And people don't realize that. Like they think like, oh, Chuck Palahniuk, this is so insightful, and this is like, don't let your possessions own you. Yeah, like there's a reason why people make fun of self-help, and I get it. I'm on the inside of it. I get it.
But then again, thinking about it now, it's everything's changed. But then again, that's also because I got to know people, I got to talk to them as practitioners, if you will. But while I was locked up, I was still trying to figure out all that stuff. And then after I figured out it was me, I'm like, okay, why is this happening? And I found out that I honestly wasn't feeling much. And what I do feel was always blunted. I never understood why I couldn't even recognize what I was feeling. So that was a start. First and foremost, like, what am I going to do when I get out? And career minded me was like, well, what can I do? So I started searching for my own purpose. And that's, I found out every job that I've ever taken or ever wanted to take was serving people or serving some sort of something else.
And
Not
you are
not
so good at that.
and
Don't
I
say
was
nice
like,
things about me, I'll cry.
yeah, I'll just keep on going. Thanks. But yeah, while doing that, I'm like, okay, with my record, what can I do with this? And I came up with psych, something that a friend a time ago, who is actually over in Germany right now, asked if I ever would be interested in psychology, just because they think I thought I would love it. And I'm like, I would hate it because there's way too many variables, and that's actually the reason why I love it so much.
Right.
All these little variables, trying to put it all together into the world's greatest puzzle.
Right. Isn't the brain just so amazing?
That and all these different experiences and everything like that. Everybody takes it differently. It's frustrating, don't get me wrong, but
You've had your days. Yeah, I do too.
it's amazing. But yeah, so that's kind of like I started doing all that. I started running because I didn't like the way I felt. And that kind of like started the cornerstone of everything. And after that, I ended up going to rehab for 60 days. They didn't know what to do with me again, because I was the only one in there for alcohol. And when I say just alcohol, I do not mean, I mean, it's like, oh, it was just alcohol. That's stupid, stupid ass
Alcohol was
shit.
the only substance you were there for.
So it's like I actually learned more about drugs being in rehab than I did anywhere else. Heck, I didn't know a lot of the terminology, and actually that still bled out a little bit farther in, so I'm finally pretty good now after a few years. But I started like kind of like absorbing the information, at least not the people, what they were always doing, because all I knew is this is not the way I wanted to do it.
And you, even still, just to be clear for the listener, your pathway is still complete abstinence. Like you don't drink or do, you don't smoke weed, you don't do any of the shit, right? Like you are fully accepting of like, okay, I'm addicted, right? Like, and I know that if I pop the top on some of this other shit, it might be just as bad or worse, you know, as life was when I was doing alcohol. So I'm just gonna accept that like no mood or mind altering substances, period. So you have like the total abstinence viewpoint. That you and I share that.
It's actually honestly the best way, because the only way you can guarantee something, and I hate living in a world of absolutes, but the only way you can guarantee something is not to do it.
Right. So that's the best way that you have found for yourself that
Yes.
there's no such thing as moderation for you.
Right. And I have to admit it, I do play with the idea once in a while. I do like to scare some people at the office, like because, it's like, oh, it's been this long. I could probably control it now that I'm actually a lot more mentally stable and all that
You
stuff.
and
I
I
could
used to
probably.
joke about that. Like, it would be like, oh, I think I'm gonna go for a beer after work. Oh, okay, I'll join you. And then we're both just like, nah,
No.
nah.
No.
We'll burn the whole town down.
But all I need is that one time where I am super stressed and it's like, oh, this feels good again. And I know I make stupid decisions when I don't have that higher functioning that alcohol takes away.
Is that really real for you though, Ed? Because I'd like to believe that your recovery is not that fragile. Like I think you'd have to make several like seriously concentrated decisions to get to that point, right?
Absolutely, because I'm not even around it anymore or anything like that. It's like kind of like I don't even have the ambition to drink. But like even if I were, it's fleeting. That it's kind of like hard to explain.
Yeah, it comes up. We think about it still, you know, but it's not anything that like you have to obsess over or entertain, I guess would be the word I would use.
Did I ever mention that I'm stubborn?
No, Ed, I
Or
never would have guessed
I
that.
think I've always used the word persistent. That's always reframing, right? But
I mean, do you have another word for denial too while we're at it?
Stupid.
So,
Non-accepting.
you go to rehab, you do some of the homework, you start relating, you start accepting more of the disease concept. And I maybe I'm piecing things together incorrectly, but I do believe that around this time is when you became a patient at the facility where we worked together.
No, that would
No,
actually
that
happen
was down the road.
before that would happen before I got sentenced into SIP.
Okay.
I was there for like two sessions,
Which I think is hilarious.
because it was like one of those it I got in because I got into there because they said, oh, I needed that drug and alcohol assessment and all that. I'm like, oh shit, I didn't do it. Just like all of our clients, or I
Yep.
should say all of my clients tend to
Oh,
do.
that's real. That happens a lot, right? Last minute assessment. You have to write me my letter. I have court tomorrow.
Yeah,
Well,
and I don't
it's six
blame
thirty. You're
them.
beat.
Yeah, I don't blame them for doing it because I did the same damn thing.
Real. Yeah.
So I did a couple sessions and then I got sentenced and they're like, oh God. So obviously I didn't go back.
Yeah.
So thanks for reminding me about that part of the story,
I
because that is an
low-key
important
forget sometimes.
that well that's an important part of it too, of how I've become very open about everything. But yeah, so once I got out of the rehab, I ended up having to go to well, it was all online. It was all through Zoom. Actually, phone calls, not even through Zoom.
Was that because of COVID, or were we not quite there yet?
We were getting into COVID and all that stuff,
Okay.
so everything was just over phone calls. Everybody was just trying to scramble, and all that stuff. And again, it's like stuff that they were going over. I'm just like, I know all this stuff by now. They pushed meetings in the rehab, but it was all like client led and all that stuff. And I had a lot of problems with the people leading them, because like they acted this way in the meeting, but then they acted this way outside of the meeting, and I wanted to punch every single one of them.
That's a major criticism of 12-step in general, is that not, and like, duh, fucking duh. You put a bunch of addicts in a room together. We'll love each other in between the prayers while the meeting is in session. Do you really fucking expect that we're all going to be model citizens the minute we walk out the door? No, that's why we need that fucking meeting, right? But people are like, well, you'll leave a meeting and turn into a hypocrite in the parking lot. Fucking duh, right? Like, how, tell me how that's any different than like your average Sunday churchgoer.
Right.
Fucking
And
dumb.
yeah. And then I also never really understood, like, why talk about wanting to drink will make it so I don't want to drink.
Well, so I think a lot of people get that twisted. I've never sat in a meeting in all my years in my fellowship where we talked about wanting to, like, we talk about the literature. We talk about, hey, here's what I'm going through. Here's what the program does for me. Here's what sponsorship looks for, like, for me. Here's service. We don't sit around just talking about drugs all day. And I think people like get that a little. I mean, you remember we went to that meeting in DC?
Harrisburg.
Harrisburg. Sorry. Yep. I get, why did DC pop into my head? I haven't been to DC in like 3 months. Yeah, Harrisburg. It was Harrisburg.
Very good experience, by the way. I will
Was
it's
a
like that was
beautiful experience.
the best part of the entire convention. Was not even part of the convention.
Yeah, it was when you and I walked 45 miles.
Oh, it was like 2 miles, not even.
We walked our asses across town to a meeting in Harrisburg, and we had an amazing time.
Yes.
And I love that you were open to that experience too, because I really wanted to go, but the other 12-step people who were kind of traveling with us for work were like, no, I don't think I'm gonna go. And I was like, fuck you guys, you're not about anything. I'm going to this meeting. And you were like, I'm coming with you.
Yeah. But again, that's also now where I'm a lot more accepting of the actual process, because before I had that jaded, that blinder look that a lot of our clients had. It's
I think
like, I
knowing
don't want
someone,
to talk.
right?
I don't want to talk about it because it's going to make me want to use. It's like, but that's not what it's about.
And you found that out first person.
Well, it's like I found that out then. But then again, actually, the person who changed my views on the meetings and everything like that was actually you.
Oh, really? What?
Because of all of our interactions and talking about it and all that stuff, I was like, okay, well, meetings are meetings. This is that, and all that stuff. It's like, I'm still not a meetings person. I don't, and honestly, I didn't really understand most of it when I first started, because I was still getting my feet wet. But
I don't think I knew that. That's like
we
really true.
had
Don't
so
say nice
many
things about me, I'll
conversations.
cry.
We had so many conversations and actual like conversations, and me just observing and all that stuff, and truly listening, because that's one of the key things, is actually listening. And then reading, actually picking up the book and reading it and trying to actually understand it, instead
It's
of
like, oh
like,
shit, these motherfuckers wrote a book about me and they never
yeah.
even met me.
And I'm at that point where like, oh, this could have been so easy. And
Right.
it's because I'm an idiot
Been so
and I'm stubborn.
I love that for you. So,
But yeah,
recovering from
so
cold.
yeah. But yeah, so 12 steps were never part of my thing, but I actually like I identify very hard with the actual steps, because I kind of accidentally kind of ran into doing a lot of that kind of work myself. Again, Having a guide would have made it so much easier, but I was, you know, doing, trying to figure it out myself.
Yeah. I mean, I think you seek guidance kind of in your own way, though. Like, I think just from knowing you and watching you, I don't necessarily outright know where you're at spiritually, but I know like when man's has a run, right? You go out, you lace up your shoes, right? You get, I don't know, 47 miles in or whatever it is you run every single day.
It's poor.
And there's something connective about that for you, right? There's something about like shoes on pavement or dirt or sand or gravel, whatever the hell you run on. I don't run. I hate running. I like want to love running, but I just don't. And that's okay. But there's something about that for you that seems by observation, like by watching you, it seems like it's really deeply spiritual for you.
Yes, because I first started doing it just because, hey, when I first got locked up and everything, over 250 pounds. I know hard to
I
envision me like
always
that.
forget that about you because for our listeners, Ed is, well, how tall are you? Like 6'6"?
6'1".
Yeah. And you're like, really? You're only 6'1"? That's not real.
I also have very good posture.
You seem taller. I would have given you like 6'4", 6'6", but maybe that's just in my brain because I respect you. But you're not a large human. I know you got like dysmorphic stuff going on, but you're not a
No,
large.
but I'm solid. You know, I usually hover around 190, 100 to 200 pounds,
You
depending
look
on the
like a
time of
runner.
year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at my legs. Trust me, they're running legs. I always joke that I run and I'm so fast that I can run away from my problems, but now I run through my problems. So,
I love that.
but yeah, it started. To you know, trying to get physically fit, and out of all the exercising that I've done and done in the military and all that stuff, running was what was the one that I hated the least. So started doing that, and some added benefits. I didn't even notice these benefits were happening because I did this through prison, and then I ended up in the rehab. They had a treadmill downstairs, so I ended up being on there at least 4 to any day out of the week I could get down there. And I just did it because I was obsessed about actually like losing weight, being fit. And when I got released, I was 173 pounds.
So there was
Like
like a
as in,
transformation from like alcohol to exercise.
yeah, like sunken in cheeks and everything. I got dizzy if I skipped a meal. And even though that BMI was that was where I was supposed to be at,
The BMI is bullshit. It'll tell you I'm obese.
it is because I have very wide shoulders. You know, I have, it's the way I'm built. I'm built to have more weight.
Yeah, I'm just
But
fucking jacked, bro.
yeah.
I have too much muscle for the BMI to count.
Yeah. But when I got out, I then re-enrolled into school for my psych degree. And I continued running, and these connections didn't even happen. I was like, I was just running because that's what I did. And then going through these courses and actually like, you know, really absorbing the information, I started noticing that I think clearer this way. Or when after a run, I just like things just fall in place. So it ended up being almost an addiction in itself. You can ask anybody. I shifted one thing to another, but I don't run every day. I want to shout that out.
Yeah, you do.
But yeah, but after I graduated and started working, I started really making those connections of how running really calms me down, because my brain moves a million miles a minute at all
I can tell the
times.
difference on the days you don't run, bro. I
Yeah.
can tell the difference the
People can even tell the difference if I run 3 miles versus my 5 or something like that, because it's like my energy levels could just go off the charts. Something that I was always missing, because one of the reasons why I drank was I wanted to calm my head down, slow it down enough so I can feel normal, slow it down so I can be just like everybody else.
Yeah, you don't
But
sit
when,
still very well.
yeah, but after, well, during our run and everything like that. Especially when I was like really like balled up inside, like a lot of stuff was going on and everything. I would go for a run and everything, and something like I was actually using intention in the right way. Like I was actually intentionally running and focusing and everything like that. And then I noticed something. I was getting clarity. Like my brain was slowing down just enough that those ideas sat around and I was actually able to think about it.
And you have had some pretty incredible ideas when you've been running. I mean, some of those, without getting into too much detail, like some of those ideas have even changed my life, right? So, as much as I have shifted your perspectives on things, you have definitely shifted mine as well. And, I think that that's such a beautiful testament to like the ways that recovery connects us, right? Like, regardless of our field, and like I know that this is a podcast, talking about our lives as therapists, we all walk through that door for a reason, right? And I think that even beyond work, there are certain things that like connect us at heart level, even if our pathways are different, right? And there's just something like really beautiful. And I think that there are things you can't always explain about being human, right? There are just some things we have to feel, which I know you hate doing.
Don't feel my feelings.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood.
Yeah.
So now you are working as an outpatient therapist in the field of drug and alcohol, and you're working on a master's now, right?
Yes, master's in clinical mental health.
Nice.
But yeah, it was a fun thing while I was going through that undergrad for my psych. I ended up having an opportunity to do an internship, which I called many places, and everybody's like, "You called?" I'm like, "I called because nobody was asking me to come and do an internship. I wanted to get the hell out of school because I got sick of writing fucking papers.
Real.
It's like tests. Why do I need to regurgitate all this information? I can do this. You give me a test now. I can do it now." And it bothered me. So I wanted real life experience, and I knew I wanted to work in substance use because I wanted to use my experience, substance use veterans, all that stuff. I wanted to incorporate it all. But I ended up getting an internship because that place was the only place to call me back. And obviously, I showed up in a suit for my interview, and they're like, and it was jeans week, and it's like,
In community drug and alcohol treatment, which I don't remember the last time I dressed up for work. Shout out to KG for rocking like yoga pants and Uggs, and she's the queen of that.
But yeah, they ended up lo loving me in the interview and all that stuff because obviously, I don't know, I was still using my masking ability, and I kind of didn't tell them that I was a patient there, and they didn't look into it. So I'm just like, hey, let bygones be bygones. You know,
There's some people over there that I would have expected might have remembered you.
there was, and that is why I got found out.
Awkward.
Yes.
Was it your therapist?
I'm guessing that there's other inner workings in there. No names were named or anything like that. And honestly, it doesn't matter because it actually made me realize and even made me grow so much more. Because I was 3 weeks in and was like, and this was before I really started talking to people and everything like that. And this was just me observing and also doing things that I wasn't supposed to be doing, especially as an undergrad. But
Sometimes in community, I almost said people services. Oh my God, I'm fried. Especially in community human services, right? Sometimes we are asked to do things that are above our pay grade, above our education level, above, this is a job for a licensed person, not for me. But we are kind of spread thin because resources are low. And I think some of us feel guilty if we say no.
Absolutely. And then to me, I was there for experience. I wanted it all out because I knew what I wanted to do. I was like, I finally had my purpose. I knew what I wanted. I went and I was getting it. But they found out. So my supervisor, who doesn't work there anymore, thank goodness. Because she
Yeah,
gave me
someone you should
exactly,
move on.
yeah, she gave me exactly what I wanted. That's the only good thing about her. She left me alone to do my thing, and my thing was I work. And that's, it's ingrained in me. I work. But no, she sat me down and said, and like had a discussion about it. She's like, okay, well, we're going to have this as a learning experience. I'm guessing she decided to do that because it would have been a lot more paperwork to get me kicked off of the internship.
Well, super interesting though, because in the field of drug and alcohol, and sometimes much to my disdain, previous clients become coworkers,
Yes.
right? Which is fucking awkward for us to navigate. And also, like, I know that you and I were surrounded by a lot of LPCs. I think until recently, I was the only licensed social worker in the building. In our social work code of ethics, we're never supposed to have outside interactions with previous clients outside of service delivery, ever. LPCs, I think, get 2 years. And I think agency policy is 2 years. But for a social worker, it doesn't matter what agency policy is. We have to go by our code because it's stricter. So to see previous
Previous
clients
client
become patients
patients.
is a little bit of an ick.
Right. And good thing was it was only a couple sessions and it was years prior.
Yeah, it wasn't anything unethical.
It was years prior and all that stuff. That's like I barely even got to like meet anybody. About the only thing anybody ever recognized was, of course, my mustache.
I mean, it is very recognizable. Like, as recognizable as I am because I'm tattooed, you are recognizable by your mustache. And you're getting there with those tattoos because you're borrowing my artist.
But he's like
Shout out to
he
Ronnie
does.
Hicks. We love him.
Yeah, he does good work, which I need to get with him again. But
He does amazing work. I'll have to show you my new pulp. Oh, did I show you my Pulp Fiction tattoo? It's dope. Yeah.
But yeah, so after that, I ended up going to each individual counselor, admitting that I was less than truthful because I am a firm believer. Then I again was setting myself up for that cognitive dissonance and everything like that. Just
Oh,
literally
the
made it
imposter
was,
syndrome.
like me thinking omission of the truth is still lying. Just because
I
I'm
mean,
letting people
it
believe,
is.
yeah. And I am an honest person, and it's like that was eating me up inside. I was worried about it all the time. But I went to each individual person and I gave my story and all that stuff. And a couple of them were like, well, why didn't you say something? We would have understood. I'm like, I have been kicked in the teeth over and over and over again about my record. And I had an opportunity and I did not want to screw it up again. And honestly, I was screwing it up because I wasn't being honest.
And did we have that conversation? I don't remember.
No, because I was already out of that box by the time you got there.
Gotcha. So it wasn't necessary.
Yeah, because you and I was like automatically, yep, I drank.
Yeah, fair.
And they ended up finishing that internship, all that stuff, lickety split. I was gone for like a month and a
You
half.
wrote us all of those adorable little goodbye letters, which
Yes.
I still have yours. Where is it? It's around
It
here somewhere.
used to hang on your wall, but you're not
Yeah,
at that office.
I think the box of things, I still haven't like fully unpacked my office boxes, but I think it's over in a box over here somewhere. But I know I have it. I kept it because it's very funny.
Oh yeah, because yours was the longest out of everybody's.
Because I'm your favorite.
Call it what you want, I don't care.
It's fine. You can, it's fine.
I don't pay
So
compliments.
you graduated, you got hired,
Graduated. Well,
you're continuing your education.
was like I had one more semester left. They ended up calling me beginning of February at like Cherie, shout out to her. Called because like I had one more semester left and everybody missed me, I think, or maybe it's the cheesecakes, I don't know.
We missed you.
I fully engrossed myself in treatment. And I was flat out said I would work here over and over and over again. I was like planting seeds all over the place because I was looking for my future.
We had like other interns, and I'm super glad that you and KG are the ones who made it through. I'll just say that.
Yeah, so they ended up hiring me as a part-time intern to help set up that living room experiment
The
for
drop in.
that for the
Yeah,
drop-in
yeah.
center. So we set that up, and then the day that I graduated was the day I got hired on full time, and
The rest is history, huh?
then I immediately graduated, got accepted into the master's program, been doing that ever since, and been here for a couple of years.
And I am so proud of how far you have come as a therapist, too. Like, knowing that you have had so many other career experiences and that you, again, like with the non-traditional student stuff, you made that decision, I guess, later-ish in life to totally switch your focus, totally go to school for something new. Might as well squeeze out that GI Bill while you're at
Totally
it.
did. Totally
Real.
did.
Yeah. And to get out of your comfort zone, and Ed, I have watched you grow so much, right? You've gotten so far out of your comfort zone. You've gotten more flexible. I've seen you like get really emotionally vulnerable. Don't say nice things about me, I'll cry. That's going to be the title of your podcast, I think. I was going to call it Run Squidward Run, but I think I'm going to call it Don't Say Nice Things About Me, I'll cry.
Yeah. But no, yeah, 100%. I can see how much I grew. I knew how frustrated I was getting when I first started, when I first started getting a caseload and everything like that. And like now, a lot of this stuff just comes naturally. It's like and if somebody can throws me a curveball, I'm not just like deer in headlights. I'm
You're
like,
really good
oh,
at consulting too,
okay.
and like asking around for like thoughts or help, or like, hey, I'm uncertain. What might you do? I know you and I, that was one thing we really bonded a lot over was consultation time. And I think that stress in the beginning for you came from like your intention for the person who's sitting in your chair, right? I think it
Yeah.
came from like, I'm not just like you're in a hole, right? And I'm not just standing at the top of the hole saying, hey, you should get out of the hole. I'm kind of like bringing a ladder and coming down into the hole with you because I've been here and I know the way out and I'm going to help you get out, right? It's more of a mutual, you know, like.
Don't want you out. I'm joking. I'm joking. I was like, because the old me would be like, I don't need any help.
Right. But now,
And
like, I think you have that, you've done that for yourself, and now you have the intention of sharing it with others. So I think the frustration comes when they don't let you, they're not ready, you know, you're not sure how to get there. But I think it, like, for you, it has always been based in the best interest of the client and never in like self or ego. It has always just been like, I genuinely have a heart of service and I genuinely want to help people.
you can ask my entire family. It's like all I want to do is help. And sometimes a lot of times it's always at my own detriment. And I do it naturally. But now it's like I started guarding myself and everything like that. And a lot of things I don't even think about. But again, when we go back to the running thing and all that stuff, that's when I have my best ideas. And because I don't even know things are in my head until I do that. And that's when the kindness and everything comes out. And then I can then think of the people that I'm seeing. And everything slows down, and I can just because being in a lot of people don't even realize that I bounce off the walls half the day
Yes, you do.
because all I do is I sit back and I just either let them talk or I'm just having a conversation because I am big on that person-centered Carl Rogers area, like the unconditional
Positive
positive
outlook.
regard,
Yeah.
because we all do have our own answers, we just have to find them.
You know how to
So
ask the right questions to help people get there.
not all the time, but it's a learning experience, and
But when you don't know, you know who to ask.
well, that and I'm not supposed to know all of it. I work really well with certain dynamics with certain people, and there are some other people I just don't jive with, and that was the one of the hardest things for me to accept is I can't be liked by everybody.
Right? Or I can't help everybody. Like, not every single client is going to be a perfect fit for me. I'm not going to be a perfect
Right.
Yeah, that's
Right.
tough too. Is I think learning our limitations is one of the most humbling and strength building aspects of being a therapist too, is like recognizing like, hey, this population's not for me, this type of therapy's not for me, and that's okay.
Yeah, and it's all growing, and then obviously with the master's degree and everything like that, I have bigger, wider dreams. I wanted to learn work with veterans exclusively, and come to find out, I honestly don't work with guys very well just because of my history with my sisters.
Fair.
That was like one of those weird revelations that just came to be. I'm not trying to say that there was any inappropriate relations. That's like I don't even like
Oh,
honestly,
you were
I
just
don't.
raised around women.
Yeah, and I don't see like clients. I don't see people that way, and I know that's a big issue, especially when it comes to drug and alcohol counseling and everything like that. There is a lot of issues when that comes in. I'm very aware and I'm very clear on my boundaries.
So I'm going to leave our Reddit stories for our next episode because I know you and I'll be super transparent. Troy just pulled in with dinner and I'm fucking starving. You and I have been talking about some ideas for future episodes also, maybe like a
Yes.
little like fuck around and find out. We might diagnose some ca cartoon characters. We might do
Go
just
down
like
the.
fun, entertaining shit together, which I think would be super awesome. So, for the listener, definitely be looking for Ed to return in the future. And Ed, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your story with us, for giving me and the listener your time tonight. I deeply appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. It was actually a lot longer than I thought we were going to go. I'm sorry, I talk a lot.
No, that's okay. Listen, my podcast, we're on. I mean, I don't want to say we're on my time, but I'm not in any hurry to share our stories and to let people know who we are as people. So, anything going on with you? You want to plug? You don't really like have any like major things, and you don't have any races coming up.
Well, it's like my running's been slow this week just because I have a 5K and a half marathon this weekend.
Oh, just a
So
casual 5K and then a half marathon, NBD.
But no, I'm actually trying to think, like I'm putting feelers out with rehabs and everything like that to because my running club does this program where they go to a rehab once a week, and they kind of like do a half hour running clinic type thing. I tried to do it with our agency. Nobody showed up. Like catching them in rehab, like just not even the running, just doing something, being
Right.
active in your life, like being actively doing something, you feel better.
So if you folks
Because
in the western, like northwestern Pennsylvania, eastern Ohio areas, want to work on helping your clients learn how to run, hit us
I'm
up.
here. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Ed. And with that, please take care of yourselves and the people around you. If you or someone you know is in need of immediate mental health assistance, please dial 988 for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Veterans, please use option one. For immediate assistance finding treatment, support groups, and community-based organizations, send your zip code in a text message to 435-748. If you'd like to contact the Swearapist podcast, email us at theswearapistpodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to support the pod financially, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/theswearapist. All links are in the description, including links for veterans' mental health. You all know the drill. Email me if shit gets weird. I'm your host, Lisa Hoffman. Thanks for listening.